Welcome to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Coming up later this hour, we'll hear about a play based on the minutes of a women's club formed in Beresford during the Great Depression. And we'll get a mid-season review of the Minnesota Twins with sports columnist Matt Zimmer. But first, it's Wednesday and time for our weekly discussion of the latest in state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. With us today is Denise Ross, web editor for the Mitchell Daily Republic. Denise, nice to have you with us again.
Nice to be back, Carl. Thank you.
Also joining us is Jonathan Ellis, columnist and reporter for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. And Jonathan, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Carl.
Well, a third Republican has entered the race for U.S. Senate. Sioux Falls physician Annette Bosworth announced her campaign yesterday at the family farm in Plankinton. She's challenging former South Dakota Governor Mike Rounds and State Senator Larry Roden for the Republican primary. And Jonathan, since she's from your neck of the woods, we'll begin with you. Who is Annette Bosworth?
Well, Annette Bosworth is a physician here, I think you mentioned, in Sioux Falls. She, at one point in time, she grew up in Sioux Falls. She spent some time in Utah, I believe, doing her residency. She really became an expert, on the computerized record-keeping, modern record-keeping of health records. So she has that background. She did work for Sanford for a while. That ended under mysterious circumstances, I guess you could say. And then she's been a independent physician. She's sort of waged a high-profile campaign against the South Dakota, the licensing board here for doctors. Basically, she has been very outspoken against the board. She wrote an editorial or a column for the Argus Leader at some point that the board took issue with. She's definitely a high-profile person in terms of within the medical community. And now she hopes to be the next senator from South Dakota.
What was her entrance into the race a surprise?
You know, when her name first surfaced, I was surprised. I had no idea that that was something she was considering. But other people who do know her and have talked to her had said that that's something actually she'd been contemplating for a while. And both, I think, she and her husband. She takes it back to when she was having issues initially with the licensing board. She had Bill Janklow as her attorney, and her story is that Bill Janklow sort of put the seed in her head that, you know, maybe you should run for office at some point. So, you know, for a political newcomer, I think everybody would agree that South Dakota's the Senate is a pretty big office to run for the first time. It's a lot to chew. And you know, she doesn't have political experience, and I think that you've seen some of that just in how she rolled out, you know, some of the steps they took to roll out and announce her candidacy, which I would think were slight missteps. But if you look at her speech, and it's on our website, and you can look at it, I mean, she really keyed on all the right, I think, the right areas that Republicans are looking at, Republican primary voters. So I thought their speech, she actually did a very good job of trying to woo over Republican voters.
Well, Denise Ross, you're based in Rapid City. Has there been any response out there to her candidacy?
I haven't been out and about terribly much since she announced yesterday, but I'm sure it got the due notice in political circles. I doubt if it got much mention beyond, you know, sort of the insider Republican politics. I've been hearing more people talk about Liz Cheney getting in the Senate race over in Wyoming to our west than the South Dakota race at this point. So I don't know. I think it will really depend on Annette Bosworth, how she runs her campaign, how she connects with voters. South Dakota is a huge retail state. You cannot win elections in this state without talking to a lot of voters, and if they like you, you'll do well, and if they don't like you, you won't do well.
So how does she, Denise, how does she go about setting herself apart then from the other two Republicans who have announced their candidacy?
Well, that is a big question. I would think that, you know, she would need to come up with a message that's different. You know, Mike Rounds is running on his record as governor. He's got all the advantages in this primary race. He's got name ID. He's got high approval ratings. He's got money. He's got donors. He's already got experienced staff. So somebody in Annette Bosworth's shoes has to make up a lot of ground on that front. It's not impossible, but it's definitely an uphill climb. If she can connect with voters, she can start to get some traction that way. I mean, that's how way back in 2002, Mike Rounds, who was the definite underdog in that gubernatorial primary, connected with voters. And there were some other factors where his opponents goofed and how they were running their TV campaigns. But he was out there. He was in the cafes. He was at the Rotary meetings. He was going around the state doing all that retail work that you have to do in South Dakota. And they like him. And he's about well-positioned to be our next U.S. senator. So you can come from behind in South Dakota, but it depends on the candidate.
Yeah, I'll add that if you look at how, you know, again, her speech yesterday, she's trying to set herself apart from Mike Rounds and Larry Roden, and this is the tried and true approach that any outsider would take, but you label them career politicians, and she has a point. I mean, Larry Roden's been in the legislature for a long time, although that's not exactly being in Congress or anything, but, you know, he's been in the legislature, I think, it'll be his 14th year coming up, and then you've got Mike Rounds, who served a long time in the legislature, and then 8 years as governor. So, I mean, that's the obvious point of attack. People don't like politicians, right? So you try to attack them as career politicians, and so that's what you saw her do in her speech yesterday.
Are political novices like Annette Bosworth prepared for some of the more unpleasant aspects of campaigns, Denise?
Well, I've not met her, so I don't have a good feel for sort of how savvy she is about the bare-knuckle world of politics. But I think, you know, very quickly you get a taste for that based on who will return your phone calls and who will write you checks and who will sign on to actually do the kind of grunt work, the mailings, the door-knocking, all that kind of stuff that you really need to do an effective campaign. And so, you know, you'll see whether she makes it to the primary election day. I think that's even a real question, if she can sustain a campaign for this long. And if she can, even if she doesn't win the primary, if she can put together a credible organization and have a respectable showing, then I think that we would look to her for future runs as well. So, you know, I think she's a blank slate as far as I know. I have not met her. I have not talked to her. So we'll just have to wait and watch and see how she does.
And Jonathan Ellis, do you think she has what it takes to make it through a hard, tough campaign?
Well, you know, you give doctors credit to start with because they've obviously made it through a lot of hard schooling. So that says something about their personality there. I mean, she's obviously a smart woman, my interactions with her. But this is a daunting task, and there will be questions that, I mean, if it appears that she's gaining traction and actually with voters, I mean, it's a tough race. This U.S. Senate race is a very tough race for lots of different reasons. You know, Denise said you got to be willing to go around the state and meet a lot of people. That's just tough work. And what you need then is you need people to sort of catch fire. You need the activists to really catch fire. If you remember the 2010 House Republican primary, you know, voters, the activists I talked to, they liked Chris Nelson, they liked Blake Kerr, but they had a passion for Kristi Noem. I mean, they were willing to go out and work for her, and that's what you kind of need. That's what she'll need. I mean, she's a big challenge, just collecting enough signatures to you know, get on the primary ballot.
Well, another name that's been thrown around as a possible Republican Senate candidate is State Representative Stace Nelson. And Jonathan, it seems like he could run, or maybe run for either Senate or Congress. And anything new from the Stace Nelson camp?
Well, yeah, there's nothing definitive from him. I mean, he's normally he's more out and about. I think he's probably. I think they're weighing what the other options. Does he challenge Kristi Noem in a primary? Does he run for the Senate? I mean, I was on Twitter last Friday announcing the Bosworth thing that she would be announcing in Plankton, and I happened to mention, we need some circus clowns for this race, and it'll be complete. And Stace Nelson tweeted back, oh, or maybe a big circus elephant, referring to himself, But he, you know, I think it was time will tell whether this race gets a big circus elephant, referring to himself. So he's, you know, he's still trying to figure out, I think, what he's going to do.
Well, meanwhile, the lone Democratic Senate candidate, Rick Wyland, has started a 100-town tour. Denise Ross, seems like a fight in the Republican primary would benefit his campaign.
You know, it could. I think it's going to depend more at this stage, again, on the candidate himself, how well he can connect with those voters. That's absolutely the right move to do when you're sort of the underdog in his position in terms of fundraising and name ID and all that stuff. He's got to get out there, and he's got to start talking to people. So he's making a very smart move at this stage. And then the next big question is, you know, kind of what the Hollywood industry calls lightning in a bottle. Can he get out there and really get that traction that Jonathan was talking about, that Kristi Noem was able to generate when she was, again, kind of came out of nowhere in 2010. So we'll see if he's able to improve his standing as far as name ID and his, and, you know, people who favor him for the Senate race. I think he's got a long road to go, but he's got time is on his side. So if he can get out there and make those connections, you know, he could end up being a very viable candidate in the general election.
With more Republicans entering the Senate race, question comes up: is it likely that any other Democrats will get into the campaign, Jonathan? Are there any names even out there? But maybe there's someone like Annette Bosworth who could pop in.
Yeah, a possibility always exists. I mean, I think the Democrats are going to have a really, their problem is to find enough candidates for all the statewide races. I mean, the party is not in good shape right now, not necessarily because of its own doing, but because of, I think, in my opinion, more external factors that have affected the party. And it's been that way for a while. And you, if you're a Democrat contemplating running for one of these offices, you really got to stop and think and say, what support can I get from a party that's pretty weak right now? And so I think that that would be weighing on a lot of people. I mean, I think if you look even back to 2010 and Stephanie Hirsch-Sessie Allen's race, I mean, the party was in just such bad shape, and it was just very, didn't seem from my perspective that there was a lot of help for her. So I think that that's, you know, not only just getting into the Senate, you know, another Democrat in the Senate race, but just getting a full slate of candidates. A lot of Democrats, I think, would look at this and just say, maybe it's time to, you know, sit this one out. So that, you know, I don't know. We'll see.
Well, Denise Ross, what do you think about any other Democrats coming into the race?
Well, I may be wrong. Jonathan, correct me if I've missed something definitive, but I don't know that we've ever finally heard from Brendan Johnson that he is out. I know his dad has kind of indicated that, but then I reported that his dad was backing Tim, who is Senator Tim Johnson, was backing Rick Wyland based on a conference call and comments that Senator Johnson made in that call. And I got some pushback of people saying, well, I don't think you should, you know, count Brendan out yet. And that was several weeks ago. We haven't heard anything. And Brendan's position as the U.S. Attorney for South Dakota is that he's not allowed to talk about these things. But as a reporter, I'm still kind of keeping one eye on that situation. And it could all be over with, and I could be wasting my time and energy on that. But I've heard from some insider Democrats that that's still a possibility. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Well, speaking of the Democrats, this morning the state Democratic Party and several labor unions announced that they'll push for an initiated measure to raise South Dakota's minimum wage from $7.25 an hour to $8.50 an hour. Jonathan, this seems like if this makes it to the ballot, people essentially be able to vote themselves a raise?
I was just down on the Democrats for their, but here's one area where they've been pretty successful in the last election cycles. Is with these ballot initiatives. You know, they had successful ones with the Economic Development Fund that the governor had. They had also with the governor's proposal on education reform. So they have had some successes, and here's one that, you know, in a lot of places, you know, parties will get things on the ballot to help drum up support for their candidates as well. I mean, you're trying to get your base enthused to go out and vote, and ballot issues can sometimes, you know, often can do that. And so while they're also voting for a ballot issue, they're also voting, you know, for, you hope, your Democratic candidates if you're sponsoring this. So This is, you know, this is an interesting, I think this has been successful in other states, and it's interesting to me, too, that this also comes with cost of living increases.
Denise Ross, is this way for the party to essentially enact policy on their own without going through the legislative process?
Well, yeah, that's exactly what it is. Or, as we saw last cycle, it was a way for them where they were not successful during the legislative process to go straight to the voters and present their case to the voters, and they were successful there. So it's an interesting situation, and it brings back to my mind the whole issue with the abortion ban that we went through getting close to be a decade ago now, but where the legislature was pretty overwhelmingly in support of one kind of a policy, and it got on the ballot, and the people overturned that pretty decisively. So I think the Democrats have found a way, and they've got a network in place. They've got, that's a way they can get their voters energized for sure. They, back in during the abortion debates, they awakened hundreds and thousands of people who had not been engaged politically before. A lot of young people got engaged, and so I think it is a very effective tactic for them. I think, you know, if they want more legislative success, again, we have the redistricting issue, which I address on a regular basis, but as long as we have politicians handling the redistricting, they're going to be in control of that, and we're going to have Democrats at a disadvantage in fear because the Republicans are controlling that. But and it's the opposite way in other states. It's not, you know, one party or the other. It's whoever, whichever party has control. But I think you're going to, you know, it'll be very interesting. I've heard, I've not seen any definitive polling, but I've heard that this issue polls very well. So so we'll see what happens.
Well, finally, the U.S. House finally passed a farm bill last week, but one with funding for food stamps and other programs removed. The Senate had passed its version of the farm bill several weeks ago with the food stamp and SNAP funding in it. The House version passed on mostly party lines. Farm bills in the past have been bipartisan efforts. When the House passed this last week, Jonathan, was this just a political move, or was there some hope that maybe this will lead to a compromise?
Well, I think that Speaker John Boehner is cognizant, and having served on the Agriculture Committee and himself, that for his rural lawmakers, this is an issue. I mean, they've got to have a farm bill, some kind of farm bill, some kind of, you know, whatever's in it. But there's got to be, I think, some certainty for the agriculture. And I think he was sensitive to that fact, and they had to get something passed. And, you know, this was unprecedented to break the nutrition programs out, which, again, account for the vast majority of what we call the farm bill. But to break those out and then debate those separately, yeah, that's unprecedented. But, I mean, I think the goal is to get something to conference committee that then the Senate and House can work out. And then, but when they work something out, I just don't see that the Senate and the House, that they can come to a bill that both chambers will accept. The House will want more cuts in the nutrition programs. The Senate just won't stomach that. So I'm pretty pessimistic that we'll see really anything in the near future.
Denise Ross, do you share Jonathan's pessimism?
Well, you know, I don't have a good enough grip on what really is happening. I mean, you hear from the politicians, Kristi Noem and John Thune, in their calls last week with reporters. Thune said he had no problem with the split. He didn't see it as a problem for getting a final bill passed. Kristi Noem had sort of the same take on it. And then you read some of these national accounts of, you know, supposedly really smart people who are in Washington and have their fingers on the pulse here, and they're saying this is a disaster. The other thing that Kristi Noem said last week was that she had assurances from the House leaders that they were going to take up a separate nutrition bill, and that she was really counting on that, and she had faith that that would happen. So I think we'll see if the House does take any action on that here coming up. And then, you know, once it gets into conference committee, like Jonathan said, there's no guarantee that the final bill will be accepted by everybody or by a majority. So I do think we have a long time to go, and I think they're going to be working on this all through the August recess, because the extension runs out at the end of September. So if they don't have something that they can put on the floor when everybody gets back from the August recess, then I think we are in trouble.
Well, we'll have to watch and see what happens there. Denise Ross, thanks so much for joining us on Dakota Midday.
Thank you.
And Jonathan, thanks for your time as well.
Thanks, Carl.
Jonathan Ellis is a reporter and columnist for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader, and Denise Ross is web editor for the Mitchell Daily Republic. The Dakota Political Junkies are a regular Wednesday feature of Dakota Midday. I'm Carl Gerke. You're listening to South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Coming up after a short break, we'll get a mid-season review of the Minnesota Twins with sports columnist Matt Zimmer. And later this hour, we'll hear about a play based on the minutes of a women's club formed in Beersford during the Great Depression.